You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Are we live? Are we good? Okay. Hi, everybody. It is Sean coming to you live from Sean's office. And I wanted to use this Zoom call to tell you a story about one of our first trips to Oaxaca, one of my first trips to Oaxaca. It was the first full team. It was back in 2014. And that was the year we went down to build the wall. And one of the things about that trip is it was really cool and being able to experience that. And I had little kids at home. So every night where we stayed, there was this rooftop, like, gazebo. Frankly, it looked like a party area, but we never saw any parties. But I would go up there and I would tell, I would call Kendra. And I would video chat her and the kids. And I remember in that video chat, you know, there were some of the things that we'd be sitting there talking, and suddenly you'd hear off in the distance this, like, super loud sound. And I'm like, oh, you know, can you hear that? And she'd be like, no, it's just all garbled. And it was like, oh, that's the propane truck coming through. And they would always be like, blah, blah, blah. It was just super loud thing. And of course, on the video call, Kendra couldn't really get the full experience of that. And you couldn't hear the dogs barking because there were dogs barking everywhere. And so we would go to this. We would have a Zoom chat, and of course, she wouldn't be able to experience that. And then I remember telling her, like, you know, one of the years we stayed, the place we stayed at was right next to a panaderia, which is a Mexican bakery. And every morning, the smell of that bread, and I remember going, like, Kendra, oh, if you could just smell it, it was sweet bread and dulce, sweet bread. And being able to say, like, can you smell that? And of course, you know, back in Lewistown, she couldn't because the video just didn't have the ability to do that. And I remember, you know, one of the other things was talking to her about the food. And I had one of these homemade tortillas that they had. Now, and be able to say, oh, Kendra, first of all, it just smells so good. And well, you got to taste this thing. It's so tasty. And being able to do that, just you can't do it over video. And, of course, one of the hardest parts is that my kids were really little at that point. Tommy was probably, what, 4? So 4, 6, 8, 10, if I'm doing my math right, which I'm probably not. Cara would have been 10 around that time. Maybe older than that. But anyway, but then the kids would go to bed. And, like, okay, good night, kids. Say good night to Dad. But I couldn't give them a hug. I couldn't give Kendra a kiss goodnight. I couldn't tuck the kids into bed. And even though I was there, and of course, back in my early days of missions trips, like, we used to have the, like, there was zero way to write back. And I remember when I went on a missions trip in high school, we had one day where there was a phone call that went back home, long distance phone call, cost like $1 million, from Venezuela to just communicate back to all the families, we're okay, everything's good. And that was the best you could do. And, of course, now having video chat live is incredible. But there's still something missing because you can't get those smells. You can't get the full experience of those sounds. You can't get the taste. You can't get the hugs. You need something more. You need closeness. You need connection. And you need
proximity. And so if I'm standing right behind you, I'm here. And you can turn me down a little bit because I'm kind of loud. But the idea of being present matters. And there's just some things you can't do from a distance. And there's another thing that I didn't, you know, mention in that video because it didn't apply then. But a couple of months ago, I clearly had some sort of an infection, like a sinus infection thing. And I remember the doctor allowed me to schedule a video call, a video appointment. And that was great, like if it was pretty easy. But, you know, clearly the doctor can't look into my sinuses and look into my ears. Because, again, there's just some things that you can't do from a distance. And so we're in this series called United States, which really has nothing to do with the states. It really has nothing to do with our country. but it has everything to do with unity and closeness in our relationships. And what I want to talk about with you guys today is that growing closer in unity requires proximity. And so we're not just talking about, like, as we've sung about already, you know, we're talking about unity as a church. We are talking about, on some level, unity as a country, obviously kind of coming back together now after that thing that happened on Tuesday, whatever. That was Election Day, just in case you weren't sure. And saying, okay, how do we come back together as a country? How do we come back as a church? How do we come together as a church? But also in all of our relationships. And as I said last week, most of what we're going to be talking about with this series is about relationships with other Christ followers, with other people that follow Jesus. But these principles will work with anybody. Because if you want to grow closer in your relationships, it's going to take some things. And last week we talked about intentionality, that you're going to have to do some work. And this week we're talking about proximity and the idea that you need to be together with other people. And so we're going to be in a passage in Hebrews chapter 10, as Jack already read. We're going to turn on the house lights here. If you have a paper Bible, you can turn to Hebrews 10. If you have the YouVersion app, you can zoom down. Hebrews is almost at the end of the New Testament. We'll be in chapter 10 here for a little bit. And we don't know who wrote Hebrews. The author is not given in this book, but it was a letter written to Hebrew people, to Jewish people that were followers of Jesus. And so there were some things, some instructions that were given there to them. And in chapter 10, we read this in verse 24. The writer says, "Let us consider how we can stir up one another to love. Let us help one another to do good works. And let us not give up meeting together. Some are in the habit of doing this. Instead, let us encourage one another with words of hope. Let us do this even more as you see Christ's return approaching." And we've already been singing about that idea of Christ is coming back, and what does that look like, and as we look forward to that. Can you pull me down just a little bit, Isaac? Sorry. I feel like, I don't know, I don't. Maybe my sound checks, I just never do it right, because I always say that every week. But this idea of meeting together, of being together as the church, is something that you can't do from a distance. And, you know, there's the old phrase, you can't phone it in. Well, you can't Zoom it in either. There are just some things. In your prime groups this week, you're going to have a chance to talk about, you know, just brainstorm. What are some of those things that you can't do up from a distance that you can only do up close? And so I want to talk about these things that the writer of Hebrews lays out here. And then we're going to look at Jesus. Because Jesus does some very intentional things that are very related to connection, to closeness, to proximity. But there's three things, and if you will, you can say that there are three heads of lettuce in this passage that we need to see. The first head of lettuce is, let us push forward. Let us push forward. And if you look at, and we're using the NIRV this week, but your translation may say things slightly differently, the version you're using. But the first thing we see here in verse 24 is the writer says, let us consider how we can stir up one another to love. Let us help one another to do good works. And again, in your translation, that might be as a combined phrase, which it is. It was written in Greek, and it was one connected thought. He says, let us push forward. Let us consider how we can stir up one another to love. Let us help one another to do good works. This idea of doing something for others. And doing what it takes to make that connection. The word here that says stir up one another, it's a Greek word. I gotta get to my passage here. I got excited. The Greek word is paroxymos. Paroxymos, and it means to have a sharp conflict or sharp point. And the idea of this word is where we get the word, like the concept of a spur. And again, your translation may say, let us spur one another on. And so a spur is something that a person that, you know, the horse rider, cowboy, whatever, uses and does to get someone, to get a horse to move forward. And so they would use spurs and they would push and hit, I guess, I don't know. I know they spin when you go like this and they jingle, jangle, jingle. Because I am totally a horse raider. I'm a cow, I don't know, Like, what do you guys think? Am I close? All right, that'll work. Okay, all right, good. I'm totally a country boy. But the idea, anyway, the word means to stir up, to push people on, and that's what you do with a spur on a horse. It's to get the horse to move, and sometimes it's just a light tap. Sometimes it's a strong push. Sometimes it's something that makes the horse go. And so the writer of Hebrews is saying, look, as followers of Jesus, we need to spur one another on. We need to push one another forward. We need to do what it takes to get them to go forward. And sometimes that's not pleasant. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it's going to hurt. But if you are trying to truly care about someone else, if you truly care about the relationships with other people, you are going to spur one another on. And that means saying, hey, I think this is something. We're going to talk more about that in a couple of weeks, about what it really takes to call out and to see someone and say, hey, I care about you so much that I'm going to say something that might hurt a little bit because that's how much I care about you. So the author of Hebrews says, let us push forward. We need to be pushing forward. And this is something you can't do from a distance. You need to be close. You need to have proximity. You need to have that connection. The second thing the writer of Hebrews says is, let us meet together. That's the second head of let us. Let us meet together. Let's come together. And in verse 25, the first part, the writer says, and let us not give up meeting together. Some are in the habit of doing this. See, God created the church to be together. We are meant to be connected to each other. And so the writer says, don't give up meeting, because some people, they're not doing this anymore. They think they don't need it. And really what the author of Hebrews is saying is, you know what? No excuse is a good enough excuse. Because we need to be connected to one another. And this word give up, it means to reject, to abandon, to forsake. It's not a kind word. It's not like, it's not a big deal. It's like, no. Who do you think you are rejecting getting together with the body of Christ? Who do you think you are abandoning this connection called the church? We need to not give up. We need to not abandon each other. We need each other. And he says some are in the habit of doing this and saying that there's no excuse. There is no way that you can get out of that because we are supposed to be connected. There is something powerful about being together. There is something powerful about worshiping together, like online worship. We're glad we've got it. It's an option for people. People are sick. They're out of town, whatever. But there is something about being shoulder to shoulder, elbow to elbow with your brothers and sisters in Christ and hearing the voices. And being able to sing together. And, you know, we've been at home. Obviously, there are certain times of year we don't meet here on Sundays. And we often will, as a family, watch another church. Because there's other churches out there. And they're way better than this one. At least as far as what you see from this guy talking. But when we've come, we do the worship time. And they're like, you know, super high-end productions. You know, we're talking big churches. And there's still this weird nuance, like even though there's six in our family, and maybe we're all singing out, but there's still like this a little bit awkward. It's a little bit awkward. And that's not actually the reason why we should be here together. But the writer of Hebrews says, you know, there's something powerful about being together in the same room, that we need that connection. And there's something powerful about being together as brothers and sisters and sharing and being able to hear what the needs are. And there's something powerful about even just, and you guys know this, like a text sometimes just, it's great. I'm not saying we don't communicate. But sometimes you just can't communicate in a text what this can communicate. Sometimes, you know, we read inflection. We read things in a way that isn't really what was intended. And you see all caps and you're like, why are you yelling at me? And you're like, I wasn't yelling. I accidentally hit the caps lock button. Like, you know, like all of those nuances. And so there's something about meeting together that the writer of Hebrews says, no, God, Jesus died for this church and we need to not give up. We need to not abandon this. We need this. We need it because things are not going so well. We need it because we need each other. And we're going to see that in just a moment. But he says, let us meet together. And we talked about this. We talked about a bunch of this stuff. There's a slide before and after. We talked about it in our Real Relationship series. We talked about this in I Heart My Church series. If you want to go more into this Hebrews chapter 10, passage. We also talked about it in the next series. So again, all those are available on our website to listen. You can see that on the slide. But the idea of being together is so important. And there's no good excuses. And here's the final head of lettuce. The final reason that we should do this is that he says to let us come alongside. We are to come alongside each other. So continuing in the passage, in the second part of verse 25, it says, let us not give a meeting together, some of us instead, so instead of not meeting together, instead, let us encourage one another with words of hope. Let us do this even more as you see Christ's return approaching. And again, I don't mean to like throw all these Greek words out because probably you don't speak Greek. But again, this was the original language. It was translated into English. And this phrase to encourage each other, the Greek word is a really cool Greek word. It's called parakaleo. And it literally means to call alongside. And so when you, almost every time you see the word encourage in the New Testament, it's this word parakaleo, which means to come alongside. And so it's not just a matter of like, hey, you can do it. Good job, you out there. It's like, no, I'm here with you. I'm here with you in this moment. I don't know if you guys, some of you probably, but most of you probably not, are old enough to remember the Barcelona Olympics in 1992. And I can't even remember the guy's name. Everybody knew his name at the time. But he was a runner on the track and field. And as he was running, this guy, he got there and he pulled a hamstring. And you see this moment of, you know, the race is long done. But this guy is kind of limping towards the sideline. And there's this powerful moment where this man comes out of the stands. You guys are nodding your head. Some of you remember this now. Comes out of the stands, actually pushes aside the security guard and jumps over the fence to go down to the track. And it turned out that this was the kid's dad. And the guy came right down next to him and put his arm around him. And the two of them together walked and made their way, limped their way to the finish line. It was so powerful. Like, you can't write this stuff. You can't imagine this stuff. This actually happened. And that's this word, parakaleo. That's what it means to encourage one another, to come alongside. And for that dad to be like, come on, kid, you can do it. Or even like, suck it up, man. You didn't come here to lose. You came here to win. You didn't come here to start. You came here to finish. You know, he could have said all those things. He could have been like, hey, I believe in you. I'm sending good vibes your way. What? Thoughts and prayers. Come on, people. No. This word means we're going to come alongside of you. I'm going to be there with you. I'm going to encourage you. I'm going to help you through this. And he says we need to do this all the more as we see Christ's return approaching. Why? Because the closer we get to Jesus returning, the crazier and crazier this world is going to be. And we did a whole series, it's not on the slide loop, but we did a series called The End. And we talked about what the end times looks like and why that's all going to transpire the way it is. And so the writer of Hebrews is saying, look, guys, it's not going to get easier. So the further apart you get from one another, the harder it is going to be for you. So come alongside. Parakaleo with one another. Encourage one another. Be there together. Because we need each other. And if you want to grow in a healthy relationship, if you want to fix your relationships, if you want to have a better relationship with the people around you, it's something you can't just phone in. You need to be there. You need to help push one another forward. You need to spur each other on. And again, sometimes that's not pleasant, but that's okay because it's better. It's for your growth. We need to meet together because we can't do this separately. And we need to come alongside. And all of this comes back to the idea is that if you want to grow in your relationships with other people, if you want to grow in unity with others, and again, when I say others, like, don't automatically think that other church down there or those people that didn't vote the way I do. Those are all legit. But maybe you need to be thinking about your spouse. Maybe you need to be thinking about that parent that you haven't talked to in a long time. Maybe you need to consider a friendship that you had for years that you broke off. Because growing closer in unity requires proximity. There's just some things you can't do from a distance. And please, don't hear me. That doesn't mean you can't send a quick note, say, hey, praying for you today with that big interview. Hey, I just want you to know I think you're going to do a great job today as you, you know, start the new job. Whatever. Like, no, we absolutely could and should do that. But there's something about being there together. There's something about why we have prime groups, so that you're in each other's lives. And honestly, I mean, we had this past week was family prime, and our prime group had Thanksgiving dinner, And I think the number of kids doubled somehow at dinner. I think there were easily 243 kids under the age of five running around there. And it was amazing. But just even some of the casual conversations, and again, I think the discussion guide is so important, because if we're not rooting things in what the Bible says, then we can just have neat old conversations and frankly spend our time doing other things. But there was something about just even those fun moments of getting to know people in a different way. And you can't do that from a distance. You do that around the table or around the floor or around the blocks on the floor. I'm looking at you, Anthony, playing with the kids who happened to be my senior in high school son with no other kids around. But anyway, but there's something about that connection and that proximity. And all I'm saying, and we're going to get into this some more and it'll clarify probably, but don't say, oh, I wish I had a marriage like them, but not actually spend time with your spouse. Like, and we'll get to this in a little bit maybe, but like date nights. Go on a date. Oh, we've been married. We don't date anymore. No, you should. Like, there's so much to this idea of connection. I don't get along with that person. Well, you're not going to get, I'm getting ahead of my notes here, but you're not going to do that from a distance. You need to get together with people. If there's someone that you don't agree with, get closer to them. Physically, proximity matters. So it requires, growing closer in unity requires proximity. That's a big deal. And so I want to talk about some of the things that Jesus did. I want to talk about some proximity, a proximity alert that seemed to be a thing. I think in The Matrix, did they have the proximity alert when like the big squid things were coming? Anybody with me? No? Because if you remember the Barcelona thing, you were old enough to see The Matrix in the theaters. And so that's like four of you. But I think there was like this thing when the squid things were coming to attack the ship. It said proximity alert. It also happened in that movie with Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz, Night and Day. I think there was like a proximity alert. I'm like, Louie. Okay, anyway. All right, so anyway, what it means is something about being near. This is an alert for being near to each other. And what I want to look at is some things that Jesus did. And if Jesus is meant to be our example, which we're going to come to at the very end, but you should know hopefully at this point that Jesus is meant to be our example. We are to live like he lived and do what he did and think the way he thought, not just reading like, oh, that's a good story. No, it's meant for us. And so the first thing that I want you to understand when it comes to proximity, when it comes to connection, is that you can't get dirty from a distance. And I'm not talking about sin here and like, oh, let's get close so we can sin like that. That's not what I'm saying. But you can't get your hands dirty. You can't actually get involved from a distance. And sometimes we need to get our hands dirty. Sometimes we need to actually get into the mess with people, because you know what? Can I just do this for me, right? I want you to look to the person next to you and say, you are a mess. Now look to the person on the other side and say, you are a mess.
You're a mess.
Yeah, because we're all a mess. Our lives are a mess. And maybe on the outside they look good, but dude, there's a lot of mess and dirt inside. And so this idea of like, oh, I'm not going to get my hands dirty. Well, if we don't get our hands dirty, if we don't get into the mess, we're not going to make a difference in anyone's lives. If we're not getting into the mess, we're not going to resolve any issues. We're not going to help. We're not going to grow closer. And you can feel all you want, but if you don't get dirty, if you don't get your hands dirty, you're not going to make a difference. And here's this passage. So we're looking at what Jesus did. In Matthew chapter 8, we see this story, and you probably, if you're familiar with the Bible, maybe heard of this or familiar with it. But in Matthew chapter 8, verse 1, it says, large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountainside. Suddenly, a man with leprosy approached him. Time out. Couple of things here. Leprosy, very common disease during Jesus' time. Very contagious disease during Jesus' time. Today, I found out, like, it still exists, and apparently those little things that roll up into a ball, armadillo, yeah, whoever said that. Armadillos carry leprosy because, you know, that's the thing. But you can take antibiotics and get over it. Back then, that wasn't a thing. Leprosy meant, you know, you have sores, your hands, fingers, nose, ears, like they all start to fall off. And so because of that, no one wanted to be around a leprous person, a person with leprosy. And even the rules kind of said that a person with leprosy had to stay opposite of anyone else and yell out constantly, unclean, unclean, so that you didn't accidentally get near someone with leprosy because of how contagious it was. On top of that, the Jewish law, because it was an unclean disease, no one who was following the law was to be near a person with leprosy. They weren't to be around them. They weren't to certainly not to touch them. They were to stay away because that could make them ceremonially impure. And so religiously, they should stay away from leprous people. So here, Jesus is coming down from this mountainside, and a man approached him, which right off the bat, this guy should not be coming to Jesus or to anybody. He should be staying away. Because whoever's near him could either physically catch leprosy, is that what you do? Attract it? Or anyway, contract leprosy, there we go. Or at the very least, maybe just it would affect their ability to go and worship in the temple, because the Jewish law said that you couldn't be around a person and then go worship in the temple without going through a process of cleansing yourself through some rituals and things like that. So this guy comes to Jesus and says, "Lord," the man said, "if you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean." Now, if you know anything about Jesus, if you've paid attention to any of Jesus' miracling and all the things that he's done throughout the different stories we have in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, four different perspectives on Jesus' life on this earth, you would see that many times Jesus would say, "Be clean." Jesus would say, "Go home," and that person will be healed. Jesus would say, "Go and wash, and you will see." Jesus would say, "Get up and walk." Jesus would say. So Jesus could have stayed, which is the past tense of say. Jesus could have said, "You're clean. Go away." Jesus could have said, "You know, go over to the river, jump in three times and jump out and you'll be healed." Jesus could have said, "You know, go get the leaf of a palm tree and rub it on an armadillo and then put that on your head and wait 3 days and you'll be clean." He did spit into mud and rub into a guy's eyes. Like, Jesus did some crazy stuff. But he could have said all that. But Jesus did the one thing that Jesus, as a good Jewish rabbi, as a good Jewish person, and even just as a human being that didn't want to get leprosy, he did the one thing you shouldn't do. He reached out and touched him. And Jesus was making a statement here. This wasn't accidental. Jesus reached out and touched him and said, "I am willing," he said, "be healed." And instantly the leprosy disappeared. And so Jesus essentially contaminated himself from a Jewish law tradition. Obviously, he didn't contaminate himself from leprosy. And an argument could be maybe he didn't even contaminate himself from the Jewish law because the man didn't have leprosy by the time he touched him. I mean, how does all that work? Like, what's that instant? But the point is, Jesus was touching the unclean. Jesus got his hands dirty. And sometimes we're going to need to get our hands dirty. And again, feeling it, like, "Oh man, I really feel bad for them. Oh, I really care about them." You know, again, thoughts and prayers, sending vibes. But that doesn't actually mean anything if you're unwilling to do something. And so getting dirty might mean that you sit with the unpopular kids at the lunch table. And I'm not saying because that means they're dirty, but people might look at you that way. Why would you sit with them? You're done with us. Maybe that means spending time talking to a homeless person. Instead of being like, "Well, you know, gave it the office." Maybe you need to have a conversation with someone. Maybe that looks like being kind to that obnoxious coworker that everybody else talks about. And I assure you that if everyone talks about them, it's because that person gets on everybody's nerves. And if you come alongside, if you parakaleo that person, you're going to become the one that everyone talks about too. But are you willing to get your hands dirty? Are you willing to get close to people? Because maybe your sitting with that person at the lunch table is what changes them. Maybe you coming alongside that coworker is what changes them. Maybe you are the difference, because no one else has ever done that before. And so Jesus got his hands dirty. He entered, and get this, right? Let's just forget the story of the leprous man here. Jesus lived, this is a weird word, but Jesus was in heaven, in the glory of the Father, as the second person of the Trinity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And he descended, he came down to this stinky, sweaty, dusty, poopy, nasty world, and got himself dirty and became a human. Philippians 2 talks about this. So that he could die on our behalf. And if Jesus stayed at a distance, we're all going to hell. So if Jesus is our example, maybe we need to touch the untouchable. Maybe we say, here's a relationship that I wanna fix, I wanna make it better, I wanna heal it, I wanna just offer them some hope. It might require you getting dirty. And you can't get dirty from a distance. The second thing we see about Jesus is that you can't influence from a distance. You can't influence from a distance. You can't make a significant difference in someone's life from a distance. If you really want to make an impact of the life of someone else, you need to spend time with them, even if they're not pleasant to be around. And in Luke chapter 19, we see Jesus staying with the unlovable. There's a story, and if you grew up in church, you probably sang the Sunday school song about Zacchaeus, who was a wee little man. Wee little man was he. Something else, sycamore tree. Zacchaeus! That was my favorite part. You get down from here, because I said so. I'm going to your house today. Anyway, all right, sorry. I already told you how old I am. 92 Olympics. I was in high school then. I've seen The Matrix in the theaters, so I sang songs like that in school. Anyway, Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region. Time out. Nobody liked the tax collectors. Okay. Likes the tax collectors, not past tense. We probably still don't like the tax collectors. But the crazy thing about this is that the tax collectors during this time, in Jesus' time, meant that they were Jewish people working on behalf of the enemy Romans. The Roman Empire. There's a reason it's called an empire, because there was an emperor. People don't like emperors, especially when they shoot lightning out of their fingers at you. But emperors means someone is the boss, someone is in charge, someone is coming in and forcing their way. And the Romans did that to the Jewish people, and that's why they had to go through all the trials. We did a series about that. They had to go through all the trials for Jesus' crucifixion, because the Jewish people didn't have the authority to carry out an execution. And so he was a Jewish person working on behalf of the enemy and was making some money on the side, because they would always cheat. Because if you were a Jewish person and your tax collector Jewish person came to you and said, hey, you owe me $30, the tax might be $20, but you couldn't deny them because they had the authority of Rome behind them. So you'd give them $30, they'd give $20 to Rome and keep $10 themselves. Like, that's the way it works. So tax collectors were not liked at all. They were sellouts metaphorically and sellouts literally. So he was the chief tax collector in the region. So he's the top. He's the worst of the worst. And he had become very rich because he was a sellout. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. See? There you go, short people. Wait, anyway. I'm on a platform now, so I can talk about shortness. Anyway, so he tried to get a look at Jesus, too short to see over the crowd, so he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. When Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. So wait. Jesus, you're a Jewish rabbi. You do realize who Zacchaeus is, right? You do realize what Zacchaeus does. And it'd be one thing to be like, hey, Zacchaeus, stop doing that. But you do not stay in his home. Why would you spend time with him? Why would you spend time in proximity with someone like that? Like, maybe you go to the door and be like, no, I'm just going to stay out here. I'm cool. But to go in and stay with him? So Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. Because now what? Jesus saying, I'm willing to spend time with this guy who's unlovable, is changing Zacchaeus already. Whoa, this Jewish rabbi, Jewish people ignore me. Jewish rabbis, teachers of Jewish people, They definitely ignore me. Now, this guy wants to be at my house. So Zacchaeus is changing because Jesus went to this unlovable guy. Now, everybody else. But the people were displeased. He has gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner. That's a nice way to say words that we wouldn't be allowed to say from this stage. Like, these were not kind words about Zacchaeus. They grumbled. But Jesus was willing to stay with the unlovable. Nobody loved this guy. Nobody cared about him. He was the enemy. He was a sellout. He was a rich sellout. He cheated them. But then going on, it says, meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. Whoa, wait, what? What would transform someone to say that? Oh, he's not done. And if I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. Like, that's a significant tax break plan. I will give them back four times as much. And so that led Jesus to respond, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. See, Zacchaeus, because Jesus was willing to just go and say, I'm staying at your house, even though everybody else made fun of him, everyone else did not like this, not made fun of Jesus, but were very displeased. But that single act transformed Zacchaeus. Because you can't influence from a distance. You need to be with people. You need to be spending time with them. If you want to see change, if you really want to make an impact in the life, you need to spend time with people. As you probably know, Jesus spent 3 years with his disciples. And do you realize the story? That what happened is Jesus spent 3 years with his disciples, died on the cross, rose again 3 days later, and was around for about 50 days. And then he left and returned to heaven. And we are here today in 2024, some probably about 2,000 years later, still following and learning and growing about Jesus. Why? Because something happened in the lives of those 12. It wasn't, Jesus did change our hearts. There is the work of the Holy Spirit in us. I'm not saying that. But they were the ones that did it. Jesus didn't continue to make disciples. They made the disciples. And it was because they spent time with Jesus. If you want to see growth or change in others, it will take time with them, living life together. So maybe there's someone that just drives you crazy. Maybe there's those people that you don't like. Maybe there's that neighbor that gets on your nerves. I can tell you this, a sideways post on Nextdoor about, hey, to the people, they keep letting their dog out and pooping on my yard. I'm just saying, would you please stop? Signed, random neighbor. That's probably not going to change things. I bet you, though, that if you forward that was sent to you on Facebook that blasts those people that voted the other way, that's going to win them. That's going to do it. I'm sure this is the time. Oh, wait, if they forward it one more time, that's going to do it. No, it's being with people. If you actually care about people and want to see them change, you're going to have to spend time with them, living life with them. And I'll say this, too. I mean, not that we're much of a, you know, most of us are unchurched. We didn't grow up going to church or doing some of the churchy things. But, you know, one of the things for me when I was growing up was the gospel tract, a piece of paper that told people about Jesus. And they're good. There's nothing wrong with them. But if you're an obnoxious customer with your server and kind of a jerk and not really pleasant and not kind, and then when it goes to pay, you give them maybe a 15% tip, and then you leave a gospel tract with them so that they will hopefully turn their life over to Jesus because you represented him so well. It's not going to work. What would be better? Be like, hey, how are you? And I remember there was a guy I knew that would literally invite the server into the seat with you. Sit down. How are you doing? Can we pray for you? Like that, I mean, that's not staying at their house. And obviously you don't want to like stalk people. That's a different category. But that's how you transform lives. because you can't influence from a distance. This is why, and listen to me here, it is far more important for parents to spend time with their kids than to provide money from your job so that they can have a good life. I can assure you, you working all those extra hours so that they can have a good life, they will not have a good life. And you can just ignore the Bible on this. Statistics. Your presence matters so much more in the life of your kids than anything you could give them, anything you could do for them. Being with them matters more. And even if you're like, but this wasn't really that big of a deal. Oh, it matters. It matters so much. Why? Because you can't influence from a distance. If I spent every day or every week in Oaxaca, would I be doing some powerful things there? I'm sure. But you know what? My priority, unfortunately, not unfortunately, biblically, is not for Victor and Letty, or Tom and Wendy, or Julian and Yuli, or any of those people down or any of those kids. My first priority is dad to my children and husband to my wife. And I can't do that from a distance. So proximity matters because you can't influence someone from a distance. And so maybe you need to spend time with the unlovable. And it takes time. It's overtime. It's, as is often said, time over time, not Cyndi Lauper. That's time after time. But time over time, which also shows how old I am because I've made that reference. But time over time, like you just, maybe it's a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here. And before you know it, 3 years later, that influence matters. Before you know it, 10 years later, your prime group is full of students that you had 15 years earlier. Because it's just the little time over time. Because you can't influence from a distance. All right, let's keep moving. The third thing we see with Jesus is that you can't reconcile from a distance. Jesus went to the unreachable. And in John chapter 4, which I'm going to do a bit of summarizing, and the screen will follow with me, so we're good if I can just catch up on my notes here. In John chapter 4, it says, so Jesus left Judea and returned to Galilee. Jesus was a Jewish person. Jesus was in Galilee, which was a Jewish region. And then the passage says, he had to go through Samaria on the way. And I've talked about this before. He didn't have to go through Samaria. A good Jewish person actually avoided Samaria because Samaritans were the people when there was the exile, and we did a series over the summer about called King Me, about the different kings. But during the exile, God said to the Jewish people, when you're living out among these other nations, do not intermarry with them. Do not sell out to them because you'll start worshiping their gods. Worship me. And if that doesn't make sense, you just have to go with me on it. And the Samaritans were the people, the Jewish people that married the other nations. They weren't pure blood Jewish. And so they were hated by the Jews. And no one even went there. And just for what it's worth, to not go through Samaria required an extra long journey. It would be like if I wanted to go out to the lobby, the easy journey would be to go through Samaria right through here. But if I was a good Jewish person, I'd go out of that door and I'd go all the way around the parking lot. And I'd come in the front door. That way I didn't have to go through all you Samaritans. And that's what they did. And so here it says Jesus had to go. That meant that he intentionally went there. Why? Because he was about to reach people that no one else was reaching. And he says eventually he came to the Samaritan village of Sychar near the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. That's what they called it. And Jesus, tired from the long walk, sat wearily beside the well about noontime. So he's sitting in a well in Samaria by this village called Sychar. Soon a Samaritan woman came to draw water. And Jesus said to her, which right there is a huge deal. Jesus spoke to this woman. Nobody talks to Jewish men, would never, ever talk to a Samaritan woman. He says to her, please give me a drink. Wait, now you're asking this person to help you? Nobody would ever do that. And you see that in a moment. It goes on and says that he was alone at the time because his disciples had gone into the village to buy some food. The woman was surprised. Why? For Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. She said to Jesus, you're a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink? And Jesus replied, if you only knew the gift that God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me and I would give you living water. See, Jesus went there for a purpose. He said, I'm making a statement because everyone's supposed to follow my example, and his disciples are supposed to follow his example. So he's going to these people that no one else would talk to. I'm going to go to them. And then there's a whole conversation that transpires, and Jesus is telling her about who he is. He's the Messiah, what it meant, why did he come to this earth to die on the cross for their sins. I mean, that's the short version of it. And then in verse 27, it says, just then his disciples came back, and they were shocked. That's shocking. They were shocked to find him talking to a woman. But none of them had the nerve to ask, what do you want with her? Or why are you talking to her? Why didn't they have the nerve to ask? Because maybe Jesus is doing something here. Maybe Jesus is trying to make a point, because Jesus was always trying to make a point. Because you're a mess and I'm a mess. And it takes a lot of time to finally get through sometimes for us to understand. And it says the woman left her water jar beside the well and ran back to the village. So remember, right near the village, named Sychar. He comes to this woman. He shouldn't have been there in the first place in terms of what the Jews would do. He's with this person that no one else would talk to. He's with them in Samaria. And she goes back to her village and she says, telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? Could he be the one? Could he be the one we've been looking for? It said, so the people came streaming from the village. There was a YouTube channel, apparently. And they were streaming live. No. They came flooding from the village. They all came out to see this man. This man that was a Jewish rabbi that shouldn't have been there. And now people are like, well, we want some of that. And then the passage goes on, jumping ahead a little bit more. In verse, what are we on? Verse 39. Next slide. It says, many Samaritans from the village believed in Jesus. So Jesus went somewhere to people that no one else would go to. And they were ready. The whole village. Many people believed in Jesus because the woman said, he told me everything I ever did. When they came out to see him, they begged for him to stay. So they ran out there to him. They believed in him, said, come back and stay in our village. So he stayed for 2 days, long enough for many more to hear his message and believe. If Jesus said, no, I am a good Jew, those people do not deserve my time, I am not going to them, that whole village would be going to hell. But he went to the unreachable. He got close. And that's all it took. Like, they were ready. And the whole village came to Jesus. Because there was a wall, there was a division, there was a divide between Jews and Samaritans. And you can't reconcile from a distance. You just can't do that from far away. And again, Jesus intentionally did this. We talked about intentionality last week. But here's the thing. You can't, if you're in conflict with someone, we're talking about unity, United States. You can't resolve conflict from the fringes. You can't resolve conflict from a distance. You can't, like, even if you're getting into a boxing match, you can't find the winner if everyone's sitting on the bench in their corners. Bench? Stool. I'm not saying you need to go out and punch everybody. But you can't reconcile. You can't fix things from a distance. This is why, in general, if a couple comes to me and they're struggling in their marriage, I do not counsel that they get separated. If there's abuse, maybe, okay, maybe there's some other specific unique situations there. I recognize that. But in general, you're like, yeah, we're not getting along. So what we're going to do is separate so we don't actually have to talk about getting along. And most times separation is just, that's just a nice way to say, we're getting divorced, but I don't want to, I'll pretend like we're not. Why? Because you can't reconcile. Sometimes you need to be in the middle of the ring. And actually, this isn't in the slides, but Kendra and I, during the Marriage Work series, she and I wore boxing gloves up here to talk about conflict resolution. And you can't resolve things if you're not willing to talk. And you need to be together. You need proximity. Jesus couldn't have resolved this from distance. They needed to be together, the Jews and the Samaritans, and they could resolve the issue, to reconcile the issue. And one of the interesting things is that I have here. If spending time with someone, if there's someone you're divided, if there's division, maybe it's something that happened years ago in your relationship with them. Maybe it's something they did to a family member. Maybe it's something, some way they voted that you didn't like. Maybe it was something that happened in your job, whatever. One of the things that you might find is that when you spend time with someone, you get to see life from their perspective. And again, we're not saying that that what they're doing is right. Sin is sin. But you might at least understand why. You know what? Why did you get so mad at me? Why did you yell at me that day? Well, I just lost my job. Oh, I didn't know that. Again, it doesn't mean that we should be yelling at each other, and it's not a good enough excuse. But it certainly changes our perspective. Why were you? Why did you vote that way? And how could you be so against what I believe in? Well, when I was younger, this happened to me. Oh, I didn't know that. And again, it's when you get together, when you come together in a relationship, in a marriage, why did you get so mad about that? Well, because you said a thing that when I was little, my dad used to say that to my mom right before he hit her. So it triggered some things. Like, do you get this? And so this idea is saying, I don't like you, so I'm going to go to my corner, you go to your corner, and we're going to resolve it. We're not going to resolve it. You're never going to reconcile. You can't do it from a distance. Jesus said, I'm going to fix unity with the Samaritans by going there, because I had to go there with this woman, and the whole village came to Jesus. So you can't reconcile from a distance. And finally, you can't serve from a distance. And all these kind of blend together on some levels too. But you're probably familiar with this passage, but Jesus did the unthinkable. He did the unthinkable. In John chapter 13, you know probably know this story. We've definitely talked about it before. It says, Jesus knew that the Father had given authority over everything and that he had come from God and returned to God. So he got up from the table. Wow, I missed all the verses in there. So he got up from the table, wrapped a towel, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, poured water into a basin. Jesus said, okay, I am the greatest. That's what this passage is saying. He knew that everything that he had been given was from the Father. Jesus is God. And so, being God, so, not instead of or in spite of, but because he was God, he got up and got dressed like a servant. And not just a servant, but frankly, this was a role in that time of a slave. This wasn't a person typically that chose to be there. Sometimes they were. But it was definitely a low spot. And Jesus dressed like that and then went, poured water into a basin, and he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel he had around them. And he took on the role of the lowest servant in society. He did this for his disciples. And again, well, as you see, so... I have an extra slide there. What does the next slide say? Yeah, so there you go. So there it is again, but this time it's highlighted. So John said, when Jesus came to Simon Peter, Peter said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? And Jesus replied, you don't understand now what I'm doing, but someday you will. No, Peter protested, you will never, ever wash my feet. Because Jesus, that's not what high people do. That's not what important people do. You do not go down here. You do not come down below and do this thing. That is not what you're supposed to do. You'll never wash my feet. And Jesus, we don't have this on the screen, but Jesus says, hey, Peter, if I don't wash your feet, if you won't let me serve you, then you can't do what I do. You will have no part with me. Because I'm setting up a standard here that if you're going to be like me, you're going to serve other people. And it's going to mean that you're going to have to be with them. You can't wash people's feet from a distance. I mean, I guess you could get like a really powerful hose and like spray it off and stay away. Like, but we're talking, this is like, can you think about, and without sounding weird, I don't want you to get weird because I use this word, but think about how intimate this is. Like, this is Jesus with the people that are following him saying, I'm serving you, and I'm wiping with my hands the dirt. And it was dirty. There were sandals in the mud, in the dirt, in the poop. He says, I'm washing your feet. And then the passage goes on and says, after washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down and asked, do you understand what I was doing? Because you're a mess. Do you get it? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, because that's what I am. I am an authority figure. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. I have given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. Jesus was saying to the disciples, look, I am, you're right, I am God. I am important. And I'm showing you we're doing things differently now. we're going to serve one another. And you can't serve from a distance. You can't do that from far away. He showed his disciples what servanthood looked like. And, you know, there's this phrase that has been used over the last, say, decade called slacktivism. And slacktivism is basically, what can I do to help people without actually doing anything to help people? What are the things that I can do to do that? Maybe it's I can sign an online petition. Maybe I'll just drop some money in a red kettle. It's coming up on that time. So that we can feel good, like, oh yeah, I'm making a difference. But that way, you know, I don't actually have to do anything to make a difference. And I would say even in our own context, like, maybe your thought is, hey, I give money towards the missions team, but I'm not going to go. Maybe you need to go. Because you can't serve from a distance. You have to do something. And I'll just confess something to you, and I guess two of my kids are in the room. Don't tell Mom. So she's upstairs with Ignition teaching these same things, but not this confession. So here's something that happens in our house. Seriously. Don't tell her. She'll just watch it later. Anyway, yeah, it's not online, clearly. I'll turn off my mic. Don't make me. We're time-wise. I'll hear her in the kitchen, and she'll be working on dinner or whatever, and you know, the kids will be scattered around the house, and so will I. I'll be in one spot. I'm not scattered all around this. Anyway, but I'll hear her be like, you know, and you kind of, you know how that is, right? And I'll go in and be like, hey, Kendra, what's up? She's like, I could really use some help with making dinner. It's kind of complicated. Everybody was looking forward to it. I could use some help. Like, absolutely. Kids, your mom needs some help. Come on down here. Why don't you do this? Why don't you make that? Why don't you do that? I'll be here all night, baby. I got you. Like, and I don't usually get my hands dirty. I don't actually get involved. And that's sometimes the attitude that we have. Like, no, Jesus said, I'm the example here. I washed the disciples' feet, and I want you to follow that example. He did the unthinkable by washing their feet. So there it is. You can't get dirty from a distance. If you truly want to make a difference, you can't influence from a distance. You can't do that. It's going to take time with people. Jesus stayed with the unlovable. You can't reconcile from the distance. And again, if there's people that you don't get along with, you're probably not going to solve it by staying away from them. And again, not that it's going to be pretty getting together, and we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. But you can't do it from a distance. And you can't serve from a distance. Sometimes you need to step right in, and again, kind of coming full circle to getting dirty, to Jesus being the example of serving. Because growing closer in unity requires proximity. There's just some things you can't do from a distance. We need to get together with people. And if you can think of a relationship that you want to fix, that you want not to fix, maybe it's a good relationship, but maybe you want to make it better. Maybe there's something here that you need to do. Maybe you need to spend time closer, in proximity. Maybe you think that the thing that you've done for them was really helpful when they just want you. And there's so much to unpack with that. But I think this idea of recognizing that, because growing closer in unity requires proximity. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for the example of Jesus. I thank you that, you know, when we look at the passage in Hebrews and how we're supposed to be together and be meeting together and spurring one another on and helping one another, that it wasn't just kind of figure it out on your own, but that you sent your Son down to us, to our earth, to our stink and sweat and pain, and showed us how to do it. And so, God, I pray right now, I think that there are relationships that each of us can think of. That right now that the people that are praying with me are thinking about a person or a situation that is not where they want it to be. It's not where you want it to be. And I pray that as they desire that unity, that they would do, that we would do what it takes by connecting with them, by being with them, by getting in proximity to them. Because there's some things we can't do from a distance. And I just pray that you would help us do that, even though that might be hard, even though that spur might hurt, but it's to move us forward in something that matters. Thank you so much for your love for us, Jesus. It's in your name we pray. Amen.